surgery. Or in an airplane that it begins to lose altitude rapidly. Or before a jury rising to hear your fate. Or on an island in Norway, running from the crosshairs of a murderous madman. And even though your whole life is lived in the shadow of death, when the ultimate appears on the horizon, and what problem in history does not open up the ultimate, asked Karl Barth. Then you suddenly wake to a realization that you are walking on a ridge between time and eternity that is narrower than a knife edge. You cry to the Lord. Foxhole prayers. The realization came to Jonah in the belly of a whale, or so it seemed at first glance. Moments earlier, he had been fast asleep, oblivious to the storm hurled by God against the ship he had boarded to escape the sound of God's voice and the imperative of God's command. Jonah was wakened by a frantic captain, ordering him to get up, call on your God. As far as I can tell, Jonah does not. Rather, when he joins the crew on deck and is accused of being the cause of the calamity, Jonah speaks about God, saying that the God he worships is the one who made the sea and the dry land, the one who is presently troubling the waters because of Jonah's disobedience. What to do? Matter-of-factly, Jonah tells them to throw him overboard. They refuse and row all the more earnestly toward dry land, but to no avail. At their wit's end, they cry to Jonah's God, the God who stills storms, as they pitch the prophet into the sea. It is their own version of a foxhole prayer, submitting to God's will in the face of imminent disaster and death. Please, O Lord, we pray, do not let us perish on account of this man's life. Do not make us guilty of innocent blood, for you, O Lord, have done as it pleased you. Perhaps it was an answer to their prayer, or perhaps it was in keeping with God's original purpose that Jonah found himself not drowned, but living in the providential belly of a large fish for 3 days and 3 nights. Found himself in a foxhole of sorts, and so upon a ridge between time and eternity that was narrower than a knife edge. He cries to the Lord, but something in Jonah's prayer does not ring true. Presuming in his first breath that God would hear his voice and save him, Jonah next presumes God is responsible for his bad luck. You cast me into the deep, he prays. Your waves and your billows passed over me. You drove me from your sight. Really? This is revisionist history at its boldest. Only when his life was ebbing away, when his head was wrapped with seaweed and the waters closed over him, only then does Jonah remember the Lord, albeit in a sort of utilitarian way. Formulaic piety follows. Gratitude, sacrifice, pain of vows, deliverance belongs. says at the end of his prayer. The fish vomits. Unless ancient humor be lost on a postmodern crowd, no doubt God wanted to do the same. Not once, but twice in this little story, the palpably fearful prayers of pagans, standing as if for the first time in the presence of the living God and asking for life in the face of death. That prayer is juxtaposed to the piously disingenuous prayer of God's prophet, running from the presence of the living God and choosing death in the face of the life given him by God to lead. Juxtapose as well this morning the prayers we say in the foxholes we inhabit, when our minds are met by the fact of our mortality. Perhaps in these situations you are an advanced prayer, a true believer, a person practiced in the words that have worked throughout the ages to summon God's aid. I myself cling in the dark to the Psalms, because left to my own devices, I'm speechless. Or perhaps like the sailors, you have never really prayed to God, but have at most wrestled invincibly with the question of whether or not God exists. Yet here you are, with your defenses down, completely vulnerable, utterly alone, except for an inexplicable and unasked-for inkling that there is a presence who hears, and in whose hand your life and death just might be held. Chances are, untutored, you speak your heart, your whole heart, and trust your life and your death into the keeping of the God who, if this God is anything like Jesus, hears your cries and will deal tenderly with you. Jonah's prayer suggests a third conversation to be had on the knife edge between time and eternity. Even though he has been spared certain death by a providential gulp, nevertheless, Jonah takes the time graciously given him to blame God for his lot. As Hebrew scholar Jonathan Magnet notes, Jonah offers no hint of repentance for fleeing from God. His prayer acknowledges no culpability for his present distress. He is not overcome by the waters of the sea because he has fled from God, but as he says, because you have cast me into the heart of the sea. On the gurney, in the third sort of foxhole prayer, well, it goes something like this. What have I done to deserve this? Why have you done this to me, God? I mean, I've been good. I've been through a lot. Why? These are honest cries, intent, I think, on countering vulnerability with a healthy dose of vitriol, flung Godward in extremis. The assumption is that God has caused your infirmity or has placed you in a life and death situation for reasons that either escape you or are bogus. Such foxhole prayers contain the plaintive cry, why have you done this to me? And after venting, and as if to cover our basest complaint, in the Psalms, too, is often followed by a heavy dose of piety, a move, according to Magnet, that is simply another commencement address to graduates at Vassar a few years ago, entitled Scaring You to Action. Reflecting on his own experience of lying helpless on the side of the road in Maine after being hit by a van, King says, I had a MasterCard in my wallet. But when you're lying in a ditch with broken glass in your hair, no one accepts MasterCard. If you find yourself in the ER with a serious injury, or if the doctor tells you, yeah, that lump you felt in your breast is a tumor, you can't wave your Diners Club card at it and make it go away. We all know, he says, that life is brief. But on that particular day, in the months that followed, and in the months that followed, I had a painful but extremely valuable look at life's simple backstage truths. Like Jonah, and unlike the rich man in Jesus' parable, Stephen King was given that book before he was laid in the grave. Maybe his look will convince us too. For King, rich as he is, one of those truths was this. We come in naked and broke. We may be dressed when we go out, but we're just as broke. Warren Buffett, going to go out broke. Bill Gates, going to go out broke. Tom Hanks, going to go out broke. Stephen King, broke. Not a crying dime. But how long in between coming in and going out, King asks. How long have you got to be in the chips? I'm aware of the time passing by. They say in the end, it's a blink of an eye. That's how long. King delivered that commencement address in 2001, 2 years after his accident, and while he was still in the throes of a painful recovery. No telling whether the word he heard about the life he had been given to lead and had missed before his accident is still as convincing some 10 years later. We all have known people who have had close calls, survived dire diagnoses, managed to rise out of the rubble of terrible tragedy with great resolve, only to return after a few weeks or months or years to being the same son or daughter of a gun we knew and tolerated before the accident or diagnosis or tragedy supposedly changed them forever. Read the last 2 chapters of Jonah when you go home in this regard and consider the astonishing patience of God. A life lived unmindful of its end, its finis, its purpose, its parameters. A life lived untouched and unturned by God's address is a drag, literally, on the person God intends you to be. Sin is what we traditionally call it. Sin is what we live in. As with Jonah, we flee from God as we create this distance between us and the voice we don't want to hear. Though it masquerades under the guise of indifference, arrogance, insensitivity, callousness, selfishness, hubris, to name a few of our more charming traits. These traits, as the old theologians say, are deadly. They land us on the other side of the grave, according to the book of Jonah and the parable of Jesus, having missed the chance to be human. One gets the sense that even in death, Jonah will still be running from God. God's voice, and the rich man eternally will not get what he missed about the life he was given by God to live. What in the world, I wonder, will save our lives, will turn us around in our tracks, will convince us before the end that we were made to live in response to the God whose address summons us to the life that is life? Sometimes I think we are all just waiting for one of those near-death experiences to wake us up. But in fact, the word is very near, said Moses to the Israelites in the wilderness. See, I have set before you today. Albert Schweitzer, a young man in medical school, upon hearing Jesus' parable, the same parable we heard today, concluded that Africa was Lazarus at the doorstep of Europe. And he went out not knowing where he was going. Here's another scary story, King continues. Imagine a nice little backyard, surrounded by a board fence. Dad, a pleasant fellow, a little plump, wearing an apron that says, "You may kiss the cook," is tending the Barbie. Mom and the kids are setting the picnic table up by the backyard pool. Fried chicken, coleslaw, potato salad, a chocolate cake for dessert. And standing around the fence, looking in, are emaciated men and women, starving children. They are silent. They only watch. That family picnic is us, ladies and gentlemen, said King. My father, I beg you, send Lazarus to my father's house, to the fence around his backyard, that he may warn them so that they will not come into the place of torment. Ivy's prayer from his foxhole. Hearing the words we have heard this morning, Schweitzer reordered his life in response to God's claim upon his gaze. In Bonhoeffer's words, Schweitzer simply obeyed, took the first step, followed. Pray then, my friends, in the foxholes where you now crouch, for the hard grace of God's voice summoning you, cling contrary to your desire, or maybe even your politics, at any moment, toward the road where a stranger will meet you, like one raised from the dead. If this should happen, invite him to your table. Do not leave him to beg again outside your gate. For in the breaking of bread, you will recognize the human being God intended you to be from the beginning. And I promise you, your foxhole prayer will be answered. You will live.